Before we begin this episode, a quick correction from episode 74. The website for the CISA Shields Up message is www.cisa.gov/shields-up. I had misreported to the top-level domain as ORG rather than GOV. Either way, the correct URL is linked on the program notes from that episode. From the studios of Wavefront Audio Visual Engineering in Schenectady, New York, this is Little Brother, the show where we talk about high technology, low intelligence, crime, greed, corruption, and all of the wonderful things that happen when you mix them together. Like any responsible little brother, we tell on Big Brother. My name is Chuck Ritter, and I'll be your host as we explore this world of the high tech. This is episode 75 of Little Brother for the 5th of March, 2022. Stay tuned, Little Brother is right around the corner. As always, I'd like to remind everyone that the opinions and views expressed in this program are strictly those of the participants and not necessarily those of anyone else who may, for whatever reason, attempt to claim them. Responsible parties with an opposing viewpoint may request an opportunity for a rebuttal. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can write me at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com. So, let's get started. In light of the war now taking place between Russia and Ukraine, the group behind the Conti ransomware have issued an unusual warning. It reads, quote, "As a response to Western warmongering and American threats to our cyber warfare against the citizens of the Russian Federation, the Conti team is officially announcing that we will use our full capacity to deliver retaliatory measures in case the Western warmongers attempt to target critical infrastructure in Russia or any Russia-speaking region of the world. We do not ally with any government and we condemn the ongoing war. However, since the West is known to wage its wars primarily by targeting civilians, we will use our resources in order to strike back if the well-being and safety of peaceful citizens will be at stake due to American cyber aggression," end quote. This is an unusual action, but easily understood. Russian ransomware groups are dependent on Russian infrastructure to function, and that, in my opinion, is really what they're interested in defending here. As you've heard me mention before, I deleted my Facebook account last fall and it went very smoothly. A Redditor who has requested to remain nameless is reporting that when he has tried to help a friend delete a Facebook account, Facebook required them to send a copy of their photo ID and a short video panning across their face in order for the account to be deleted. While this is just conjecture on my part, that sounds rather a lot like the ID.me service that I spoke about in episodes 69, 70, 72, and 74. The Redditor reports that he deleted his own account 4 years ago without having to go through any of this and, quote, "This obviously is beyond what I or anyone should consider reasonable," end quote. I couldn't agree more. I have a trio of items this week about griefing connected to the war. The Independent is reporting that the Kremlin's website was taken down and that Russian state television had also been hacked, with their usual programming being replaced with Ukrainian music. Anonymous claimed responsibility, however, Anonymous is not a monolithic or hierarchical organization, it's really more sort of a brand, so such a claim is of little actual value. Second, other hacktivists, also operating under the Anonymous banner, have hacked the Maritime Automated Identification System to alter the name of Vladimir Putin's superyacht to FCKPTN, change its destination to Hell, and to make it appear as if it had crashed into Snake Island, Ukraine. Third, Jack Sweeney, a teenager from Florida who has made a hobby out of tracking the movements of oligarchs' assets, most notably Elon Musk's private jet, has started tracking the movements of the yachts of the Russian oligarchs, which will no doubt simplify the tasks that several nations have now undertaken to seize those yachts should they enter territorial waters. Just a few days ago, Orbot for iOS dropped. So what's that then? Well, Orbot is a Tor client for mobile phones. It's been available for Android for a long time. Install it on your device, and you can route any or all of your internet traffic through the Tor network, protecting your privacy by encrypting it on your end and randomizing where it appears on the internet at large, thus obfuscating your location. iPhone users, welcome to the privacy party. On Tuesday, Toyota Motors was forced to shut down operations across 14 plants due to a cyber attack. No information is available about who might have been behind the attack, or whether or not it was related to the war in Ukraine. Prime Minister Fumio Kishida has said that his government would investigate this question. Kojima Industries Corporation, a supplier of parts for Toyota, stated that they were also victims of a similar attack, suggesting that there may be a connection. Cisco Talos Intelligence is reporting that a large number of Mikrotik routers across Ukraine have been compromised and are being used to carry out brute force attacks on systems using multi-factor authentication. It is believed that this is using the Cyclops Blink vulnerability, but the forensics are not in yet. Ultimately, it's very easy to forget that your Soho routers need to be patched from time to time, so patch your systems! And those are the headlines. You're listening to Little Brother. And you know what that music means? It's time for another round of Who Got Pwned This Week. Well, this week's pwn is the Russian Armed Forces. Pravda is reporting that the Ukrainian Center for Defense Strategies has gotten a hold of the personal information of 120,000 Russian servicemen who are fighting in Ukraine. Ultimately, this is a special variation of intelligence gathering, which goes hand in hand with any kind of warfare. You have, no doubt, heard me mention the Signal Private Messenger app a number of times on here. A search of past episodes turned up more instances than I want to list here. Signal is an app for Android and iPhone which can replace your regular texting app and will send end-to-end encrypted messages to one or more other Signal users. Plus, you can use it to make voice and video calls. There's an ancillary app for the desktop that, while it can't be used to establish a Signal account, it can connect to an existing one by confirming it with the device that was used to set up the account in the first place. So what is end-to-end encryption, and why is it important? Well, most of the content on the internet is encrypted at this point in time, as it should be. There is some secret called a cryptographic key which you have to have if you're going to look at the contents of encrypted traffic. Without the key, you're not going to be able to decrypt the message. Now, I should note here, I'm using the word messages very loosely here. It could be a message like a text, or a posting in a chat, or it could be a form that you just filled out on a website, or it could be a piece of the video stream you're watching, whatever, whatever. All of these things are messages. So, as I say, most of the messages on the internet are encrypted. The problem is that the server that you're communicating with has the key to decrypt it. You post a message to Reddit, Reddit has a key to decrypt the message. It has to, otherwise it couldn't publish it on the site. So even though nobody could decrypt the message as it flies between your device and their server, once it's on the server can see the content. And that's how most of the internet works. And that's fine for how most of the internet is used, but that's not how Signal works. When you send a message on Signal, and there are other apps that do this too, Telegram, WhatsApp, but the servers at Open Whisper Systems, the publisher of the Signal app, don't have the key to decrypt them. Your device, and the device of the person you're sending a message to, will use a technique called Diffie-Hellman protocol to collaborate and decide on a key. The servers at Open Whisper Systems will put the two devices in touch with each other, but they don't know the secrets necessary to determine what the key is. Only the two devices at the endpoints know. After that, the servers store messages, but again, the servers can't actually open the envelope and look inside. Now, the practical upshot of all of this is that Open Whisper has no clue about what their systems are being used to talk about. Subpoena after subpoena have shown that the only information Open Whisper's servers have about their users are the time that the account was created and the time that it was most recently used. Now, the real beauty of this system is that it's easy to use. If you can work a cell phone, you can work Signal. On Android devices, you can even use Signal to replace your default text app, which will lead to the app automatically deciding whether to send a message via Signal or via conventional text channel, SMS. Okay, so why am I talking about this? Well, I've got two news stories this week about Signal, but I felt that it was first necessary to lay out an understanding of what it is and what it can do. Both of these stories concern the war in Ukraine. The first item comes from Cloudflare. Cloudflare CEO Matthew Prince, whose organization is in a good position to observe these trends, noted late last week that he's seen an uptick in the level of traffic between Ukraine and Signal's servers. Now, they can't see the contents either, mind you, but his unique vantage point allows the amount of traffic and its coming and going to be easily observed. Between all of the layers of encryption, correlation of the content isn't possible, so there's no information about who is talking to whom, only that chatter in Ukraine has increased. Now, he's also noted that the traffic on Telegram is up, Telegram also being end-to-end encryption app, like I mentioned before, but one which apparently doesn't have as strong of a following in Ukraine. Open Whisper have confirmed the trend, as we will see in the second item, which is this. On Monday, they tweeted, quote, "We've seen an uptick in usage in Eastern Europe, and rumors are circulating that Signal is hacked and compromised. This is false. Signal is not hacked. We believe these rumors are part of a coordinated misinformation campaign meant to encourage people to use less secure alternatives. We're seeing these rumors appear in messages forwarded on several different apps. These rumors are often attributed to official government sources and read attacks on Signal platform. This is false, and Signal is not under attack," end quote. As always, use your discretion in determining if any given tool is fit for the purpose that you would put it to. But for what it's worth, Signal is the single most used app on my phone, and by way of group chats, it has largely replaced social media in my life. I don't often talk about analog technologies here, but I want to talk briefly about shortwave radio. So, technically speaking, shortwave radio, which is also called HF radio, is any kind of radio transmission that happens between 3 and 30 megahertz. To put that into perspective, when we talk about cell phones, we talk about 600, 700, 800, 900, 1900, etc. megahertz. These are all generally what are called ultra-high frequency, or UHF. When we look at the FM radio dial, we see numbers between 88 and 108, and this is called very high frequency, or VHF. We're talking lower than any of that. The AM radio dial goes from 530 to 1710 kilohertz in a range called medium wave, or medium frequency. So shortwave falls between somewhere in between AM and FM. The key characteristic of shortwave is the dead opposite of what people naturally guess. Shortwave radio is not short range. Quite the opposite. shortwave radio waves go up to a key layer in the atmosphere and they bounce and they come back down. And sometimes they'll also bounce off the ground or especially off of the ocean and go up and bounce again. This means that shortwave radio is capable of going over the horizon and is capable of profoundly long range. Now, the sound quality of shortwave is not ideal. In the best case, it sounds roughly like AM. However, the signals are usually pretty weak, leading to a lot of noise, and the fact that they're bouncing off of surfaces that have constantly shifting shape as physical waves undulate through them, such as the ocean, often leads to shifting and drifting and flanging, and it takes a little getting used to. But this bouncing and the ability to go over the horizon makes it useful for a few things. Ham radio operators have access to 8 slivers of shortwave and can use them to communicate around the world. Now, before any pedants correct me, 6 meters and 160 meters don't count because one is VHF and the other is MF, leaving 8 bands. I have personally used shortwave radio to talk to fellow hams in Texas, Oregon, Washington State, British Columbia, Puerto Rico, Italy, Japan, and the UK, all from the comfort of my home in upstate New York. Transoceanic ships and aircraft use shortwave radio as well as satellite to communicate with land and with each other. Shortwave radio is used by militaries and governments all over the world to communicate with operatives. Lastly, there are shortwave broadcasters, who operate more or less like any other ordinary radio station, but they use shortwave to get their signal a long way. Some are state-run, some are public, some are commercial. There's a commercial broadcaster in Maine, for instance, WBCQ, which can be heard pretty much all across the United States and Canada. There's one in Toronto, CFRX, on 6070, which simulcasts an AM station there, CFRB, on 1010. Shortwave broadcasting is largely a thing of the past, though. Except in less developed parts of the world, it's generally more pleasant to listen to or even watch foreign media by satellite or internet stream. Where shortwave radio excels is in places where the infrastructure is not set up to the task or could be easily disrupted. So this brings us to the first of the 2 news items that I have about shortwave radio. One of the longest operating shortwave broadcasters in the world is the BBC World Service, which carries mostly news programming. They have largely ceased broadcasting on shortwave to most of the First World, keeping their transmitters going mostly for Third World areas. Well, the First World can just use an internet stream or satellite. But what if you're in a war zone such as Ukraine, where the internet may disappear in spots due to fighting? Well, the news is that the BBC have decided to start broadcasting to Ukraine and Russia on shortwave once again. They are now broadcasting on 5875 kHz from 0800 to 1000 UTC and 15735 kHz from 0200 to 0400 UTC. That's around 10 to noon and 4 to 6 a.m. every day local time. The broadcasts will be in English. As far as I know, this is the first time that the BBC have added new shortwave broadcasts in many years. The other piece of shortwave news concerns a radio station operated by the Russian government. The station in question is called UVB-76, and it's often colloquially referred to as the buzzer. It gets this name because that's most of what they broadcast, just a buzzer that goes off repeatedly. It operates on 4625 kHz, and there's been a long rampant speculation about what its actual purpose is. The most popular hypothesis about the buzzer is that it's what's called a number station. Number stations are stations that send out coded messages to overseas operatives, the idea being that the equipment to receive a shortwave broadcast is easy to get in most parts of the world, modestly easy to build or modify, you know, if you've got equipment that's intended for other purposes, and it leaves no trace that could be used to locate the operative. The buzzing is primarily there as we understand it, to mark the channel as occupied so that it doesn't get utilized by somebody else. Kind of like leaving a personal effect on a chair to let everybody know that the seat is taken. In the case of UVB 76, Wikipedia talks about the times when the buzzing has stopped for one reason or another, with the monotonous buzzing being replaced by a coded message of one type or another. Well, an interesting thing that's been going on now for a few weeks, but it's gone into overdrive with the invasion of Ukraine, is jamming. I don't have information on where the jamming is coming from, nor where its impact might be felt, but for a few weeks now, the signal from the buzzer has been overlaid with a wide variety of things. A rock version of the Ukrainian national anthem, a rickroll, and lots of image data, all while the buzzing drones on in the background. At the very least, this is pretty entertaining, but part of me hopes that this would cause some grief to the station's intended users. 7-3 for now. As usual, we'll end this week's show with the fail of the week. This week, the honor goes to the Russian military's communications. Shadowbreak International is reporting, quote, "For the first time in a modern conflict, the regular forces of Russia are communicating without digital modes, making them fully audible to everyone," end quote. Except the command, that is. It seems like the officers have stationed themselves far enough away from the action to be effectively out of radio range. No repeaters were deployed, and no long-range communications gear such as satellite or shortwave, so no communication. One photo showing equipment seized from Russian troops was a photo of a Baofeng UV-5R handheld radio. These are inexpensive civilian radios, often used by ham radio operators and prepper groups. These Chinese-made radios are mostly known for their small price tag of $20 to $30 and the fact that they can be operated on pretty much any frequency in two very commonly used civilian communications bands, one on VHF and one on UHF. Unless you get on top of a mountain, range is a couple of miles at best, and the privacy of analog FM signal is non-existent. The bottom line is that the troops were deployed without adequate communications equipment, leaving them isolated and making it so much easier for the Ukrainian people to defend themselves. Little Brother is produced, recorded, edited, and hosted by yours truly, Chuck Ritter. Special thanks to Fungaboo and the crowd at Helix for web hosting support. Shout out to the Albany 2600 group. Special thanks to Knight Rider 007, The Axe That Slayed Me, Azrael, and a kind stranger from Reddit for story leads. Our headline music is Adrenochrome by Super Action 80. Our Who Got Pwnt music is Analog Summer 3 by Asarhad. Our Fail of the Week music is Space Reggae by Zap. Our opening theme music and bumper is Around Chaos by Heatseeker, and our closing theme is Space Debris by Captain Image. If you have questions or comments about this podcast or want to join the conversation, please drop me an email at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com. Join us next week when Little Brother tells on Big Brother once again. Stay safe and be well. However, Anonymous is really not a monolithical. It's not monolithical. Let's try it again. Anomalous. The Independent is reporting that the Kremlin. However, Anonymous is not really a monolithic or hierarchical organization so much as it is a claim of little actual value. So, Prime Minister Fumio Kishida has said that his name right and then I fumbled over the English words. So much for one take.